Oh my goodness. You are all looking absolutely amazing and welcome. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. So, I think, first of all, to start off, I've been reviewing some of the statistics and growth of the podcast over the last number of weeks. I've really taken a stab at this again since January and realized that in the latter half of 2018, I've been a little bit bold and not been committing to uploading as frequently as I should have. But that said, the actual growth of the podcast in 2019 and me sticking to a commitment of uploading once per week from the kind of the first week in January on, the statistics are savage. Like, I'm completely blown away and humbled and amazed that people love or want even to listen to me kind of rattle on about all the different learnings and things that I'm hitting and brick walls and everything in entrepreneurship and family life and everything. So I have to say it's a huge positivity and thank you all very much for listening to me. I really, really enjoy getting to kind of talk through all of these different issues and then all of you kind of have different mediums or ways of getting in contact with me and sending me like a Instagram DM or a Twitter DM or a WhatsApp or whatever it might be, or an email. And those of you that reach out and get in touch, it is deadly. Like, you open up the conversation for me, you open up the other side of what this has always been meant to do, and that's to become a discussion or a method to say, hey, when I've been going through all these different ups and downs and things in entrepreneurship, here's how I got on, and here's the kind of the wins and the loses and loses. But you know what I mean. So it's absolutely amazing to kind of continue that conversation beyond the podcast itself. So to go back on point, this episode today is going to be around running a company remotely. So last week, actually not last week, the week before last week, I was in New York for a huge business development trip that I had planned and strategized on for MiniCorp for many, many weeks and months. And during that time, it's kind of the first real, let's say, 6 or 7 days when I was out of the country in a completely different time zone for a long period of time and had to run MiniCorp remotely. There's a lot of MiniCorp that kind of already looks after itself due to the amazing team that's in there. But there is some nuances and caveats that come along with large kind of periods of travel. And I'd like to break them down in this episode, talk about the things that I've noticed and the things that I've learned from and the things that I'm still kind of struggling with or trying to find solutions to. So that is what today's episode is going to be. And let's get into the show. Okay, so where to even start? I guess the best thing to do is to kind of to really set the stage. 2 weeks ago, I flew from Dublin to New York, and the whole plan or strategy around the trip was that there is a huge opportunity for MiniCorp in New York. And in order to seize that opportunity, I'm a huge believer, both in my own gut, but also compounded by other people's opinions and expertise and information, that face-to-face meetings and getting on the ground in order to learn a city and learn a culture and learn how business is done there is a surefire way of making sure that you're going to gain traction within that city. The reason that I know that there is so much opportunity for MiniCorp within New York, and you know, I'm happy to kind of give this away to anyone that listens, is there's this huge startup ecosystem over there. There is lots of early adopters and consumers on the ground where B2C based products actually get a substantial chance in life. I don't know if you've noticed, but in some European cities and even Dublin as well, to get a B2C based product off the ground is difficult, like properly difficult. You have cultural diversification, you have different things that are acceptable. For instance, if I was to take out my phone on the street and start to record an Instagram story, I can be absolutely guaranteed that a majority of people will turn around and go, what is that lad at? He is not, he's not well. Like, there's something not right there at all. And the only difference really when you break that down is that they haven't seen that before. They're shocked by it. And their first jump slash thing to do is to question, is that right? Or is that person doing the right thing? Fast forward over to New York, for example, because there is this absolute melting pot of all of these different people and cultures, and everybody is kind of vibing at the same time and everyone is just trying new things all the time, and they fail and they move fast and they kind of, you know, that is almost the best foundation in a way for any new B2C product to get launched. Everyone's willing to try everything, and nobody's kind of questioning, well, why am I doing this? Like, it's kind of the chances or propensity of a product to become successful there is exponentially higher than it would be here, where people would be less likely to be an early adopter. So going all the way back, the reason for the opportunity within New York is that, first of all, the majority of early stage companies and products there are very well invested into. And the reason that they're well invested into is, first of all, there is a lot of money available in an investment capacity to startups, but also the cost that it takes in order to sustain a wage or to live in New York City is a lot higher. So you'll have wages that are 3 or 4 or 5 times higher than what they would be here in Ireland. And you also have access to lots of capital in order to try new things, start your idea, launch, example. A well-invested into company, like, let's say, in a seed or first round of investment capacity, a really substantial one would be $3 million plus dollars. A lesser kind of, let's say, average would be $1 million to $1.5 million. And where I'm specifically targeting is $1 million or less, kind of 500,000 to 1 million early stage seed investment companies. The reason being is that they are the hungry, scrappy, you know, dying to get off the ground, hustle, hustle, let's move quickly, let's build things and break things and never slow down companies. It's not to say that the others aren't, it's more that once you have 3 million in the bank, and that's equivalent to 18 months of runway, you kind of have a different outlook in life. You're going to hire the premium A-grade agencies in order to create this amazing brand and identity and focus on different things, of which Minicorp may not add the most amount of value. So now that we kind of know where that main sweet spot has been, and we know that there's a huge amount of opportunity there, given that I can be on the ground, do lots of business development, help these companies in a huge value add capacity based on, first, the actual product, the product capabilities that we have in Minicorp, but second, the design, engineering, insights, analytics, everything that kind of surrounds building amazing digital products in Minicorp as well. So that was kind of the main focus or goal of the trip. I then took what was the main kind of way that we come at any new product or idea, and that's to understand what the KPIs are, understand how much money and budget and investment we're willing to put into this, understanding as well what the failure goals will be. Using all of those metrics, I then kind of said, okay, well, let's try and meet as many different companies as possible. So I jammed my week full of meetings. I tried to meet VCs, I tried to meet venture capitalists, I tried to meet founders, company owners, agencies, pretty much everyone from all different walks of life. And the reason being is that I don't really think that I can just land on one specific person, take that person's opinion, or in one specific sector and take that sector's opinion on what the lay of the land will be. I need to get diverse opinions from multiple different vantage points and then kind of make up my own assessment from there. So now that I had done that, I think the opportunity is huge within New York still. And some of the meetings and engagements that I had over there are growing and turning into real tangible contracts and clients, which is deadly. But let me tell you about the pain. And the pain goes something like this. When I was in New York, I would probably wake up normally around 5 or 5:30 in the morning. From 5:30, I would grab a shower and then my hotel room, like, it was standard, like, basic. But downstairs in the lobby, they would always have this kind of makeshift continental breakfast that consisted of bananas, apples, and cereal, and coffee, pretty much. Like, it was grand, do you know what I mean? I was there to do a job, and you gotta just try to save where you can save. So, anyway, 5:30, grab a shower, get changed, get into kind of the close of the day, head down in the elevator and go for that breakfast. I bring my laptop with me. I then open up my laptop. So 5:30 then, or probably let's say 6 a.m., would be the early morning of Ireland. Maybe, I think, 10 o'clock, something like that over here. So I would grab my cereal, grab a cup of coffee and some fruit, and I'd open up my laptop and I would work with the team back in Ireland. And I'd probably do that from, you know, 6 a.m., to sometimes 9, depending on what. Sometimes I'd have like 8 o'clock meetings. Sometimes my meetings would start at 10 a.m. So all of this would kind of vary. But I, at a minimum, I would get a good solid 1.5 to 2 hours worth of work in. And that was probably the most challenging. Normally, I would have, you know, a good solid amount of time with the team every single day. And we wouldn't have to put too much structure around when we're going to get to talk to each other. Like, we could say, you know, grab 5 minutes here, let's go for a coffee there. In between those two meetings, we're going to have a little chat. But now we're kind of forcing everything down into this condensed hour or condensed hour and a half. Because the minute that I got out of the hotel room, the minute that my first meeting started, that's when like game face is on. Because you're going, you know, 10 o'clock meeting. You might have two meetings between then and lunchtime. So you might have a 10 and 11 a.m., which you bring up to 12. Then you go out for lunch and then you go for your 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock meeting and so on. So the chances of you getting back online and getting some good solid communication back to headquarters is pretty small. There's very little chance. Then also in that hour and a half between 6:30, 7 or 6:00 and 8:00, depending on where I have to travel to for my first meeting, I also want to get like a good 15 to 20 minutes in with my family and have like a FaceTime and say, hey girls, what's going on? My two girls would probably be in school or with their minders at that point, but still, like, I get to hang out with my wife and kind of tell her about this amazing trip that I'm doing in New York, of which everyone thinks that it's just deadly. Like, you're getting to do all these wonderful things in this amazing big city. But it's hard work, like it is. And like, don't get me wrong, I'm hugely humbled and amazed at this opportunity that I have. The other day, I was only looking around in the office that we have in MiniCorp at the moment and going, when did this happen? You know what I mean? Like, when I was really young, I always wanted to have an office myself. And it seems like a huge amount of the different things that I wanted when I was a kid have come true. And that's pretty cool. But anyway, so yeah, I'm struggling with that 20 minutes good conversation with my wife, having a good conversation with the team back in Dubland, and also getting prepared and ready for my next meeting. So all of these nuances that happen in the city, I'm just not good. I wasn't good at Manhattan at that point. I wasn't good at New York. I wasn't good at figuring out the difference. And like, it is a really easy city to understand, but if you have a meeting that's happening on, let's say, 9th Avenue and 45th Street, and then you have to go all the way down to 2nd Avenue and 25th Street, like, it takes time. Like, we're talking about 30, 40 minutes of a walk, or else, you know, $10, $15 in a cab. All of the cab fares add up after a while. And you just kind of, I poorly planned as well, where I'd be going uptown, downtown, midtown, doing like all of these circles around the city and just getting that horribly wrong. But, you know, like, all of this was a complete learning curve. But I have to say, the first thing that I would take away from this whole point is condensing down my hour and a half to 2 hours with the team every day was tough. And I didn't set up the communication with the team well enough in order to sustain that. What I mean by that is, I kind of just left the office and said, bye, I'm off to New York, I'll see you guys later. Rather than saying, you know, everybody have like a list or everything ready to go through at 10 o'clock in the morning. I'll be available for an hour every day. Get anything that you need that's urgent for me to look at ready. We'll boss through it together. I'll then have like, you know, let's say it's between 10 and 11 Dublin time. I'll follow up with everyone between 11 and half 11 so that I've actually actioned on the things that you're telling me for the day, for example. So I wish that I'd done that, and I will do that in the future. Other thing would really be letting the team know that now is their time to tell me what they need me to do. There may be some blockers there. There may be some client communication that needs to happen, whatever it might be. If they're waiting for me over the course of my day, for example, the minute that I hit lunchtime, maybe 1 or 2 o'clock, it's probably 5 o'clock back in Dublin. And at that point, the majority of people are starting to wind down and it's hard to get things done. So I essentially have between, well, let's say 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. New York time to get everything that I can for the guys in the office done, which isn't a ton of time, but that was probably one of the big things. Number two, I would say, is really around communication. Communication is key, but communication drastically changes when it's not face-to-face. And if I even flip this on its head for a second and think about the whole reason that I went to New York is because I believe in face-to-face communication as a far better medium than any digital experience. But yet, my communications back home were now all digital. You know what I mean? And I wasn't set up or ready to even process that. Finding, you know, for example, Steve just does not like Slack. And I completely understand why Steve is our CTO. I completely understand why Steve doesn't. Steve tackles some really difficult engineering tasks on a daily basis. And in order to solve these problems, the run-up to the task and the solution to the task required that you kind of shut down from everything bar that task for a period of time. You need to be just solely dedicated headwise to accomplishing that task. The minute that somebody goes bing, 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 bing with Slack, Steve is like getting annoyed and aggressive, and, well, not aggressive, but you know what I mean? Like, that's infringing on his ability to solve those problems. So by me being in New York and pinging him at different times of the day, it's sporadic and annoying and difficult. But by us kind of condensing everything to a nice little time frame and saying, hey, we're going to talk on a Google Hangout for an hour every day between this time, I think would be far more suitable and easier for him to take on board and to do. So I think I just need to do that, you know, less of the WhatsApps and phone calls and just sporadic communication for the sake of communication. Good, condensed, solid plans and strategic timelines of when we're going to do it every day, winner all around. The next thing that I would say, and it's one that comes from the awesome Brian O'Connor in Credit Cruncher, is he sent me a message kind of midway through my trip. So at this point, like, to give you an idea of the rest of my day, I would have on average maybe 2 meetings in the morning, 2 meetings in the evening that would bring me up to around 5 or 6 o'clock. I then go back to my hotel and drop my bag and then go for a dinner date. Like, I may get to catch up an email. I try to whenever I could, but I would then either, like, I met people in juice presses, I met people in restaurants, I met people in pretty much any place that they would have me. But I would go out for pints, I would go out for drinks, I would go out for juices, I would go out for dinners, and all of those different elements would kind of, you know, I would be going from, let's say, 5 o'clock in the morning until, at a minimum, maybe 11 o'clock at night, some cases 1 or 2 a.m. But I kept on thinking in the back of my mind, like, I'm here to do a job. I'm here to meet as many people as possible. If I don't meet as many people as possible, then it's just not going to be a successful trip. And I think that there is, you know, there is a certain amount of truth in that. But there's also, you know, quality and depth to these are probably, they far outweigh just pure volume of how many people can you meet, for example. But so Brian turned around to me and he said midway through my trip when I was feeling pretty tired, he said, remember what you're there to do. And what he meant by that is, you know, when he was helping to build businesses over in the US, he would hit the same kind of problems of time zones and communication. And he was saying that, you know, you have your 6 or 7 days in New York. If you spend them on email and communication and work that you could do from your desk back in Dublin, it's kind of a waste of time. You set out this time in order to accomplish this goal. The next time you're going to be in New York isn't going to be for a couple of weeks, if a month. Focus on what you've set out to do and go and accomplish it. The other things, even though they may not feel like they can wait, they can wait. Focus on what you're there to do. So Brian, thank you very much for that. I think it's something that completely resonated with me, and I'm glad that you said it, because it's true. The next thing is to realize what you can devote yourself to. I'm an awful fella for this kind of stuff. I'm an awful man for believing that I can do anything. I think, yeah, it's mad. Like, I think that you should believe in yourself, and I think that you should have a huge ambition, let's call it. But in some certain circumstances, my ambition far outweighs my capabilities. There's only a certain amount of hours in a day. There's only a certain amount of things that I can get done. I'm only so good at development. I'm only so good at email. I'm only so good at these different things. I'm growing as a person. That's all great. But when I start to tell people that I'm going to be able to do something in a timeline that is just not possible, there's an issue there. And that happened a couple of times in a trip, because I'm thinking of it from, hey, you know, I can take like 3-4 meetings back at home and get lots of other things done. But in New York, that just wasn't possible. Like, between travel, I don't know what it was, just things just sucked time left, right, and center. And so that 1-hour task or 2-hour task here or there that I'd promised to get done for people would just keep on slipping and slipping and slipping. And I'd feel more anxiety towards that issue, because I'm kind of going, well, you know, one of the biggest things that MiniCorp has to its name is its reputation. And anytime that you commit to something and then don't deliver, you're kind of tarnishing that reputation further and further. So I felt a little bit bold. And I think now when I go back to New York in order to continue this investment forward, I'm going to be completely aware that what I'm capable of doing there is less than what I'm capable of doing here, where I don't have such a full plate and it's not so many back-to-back meetings. The other thing is, like, to lay my cards on the table, if you have a good solid 27, 28 meetings in a week, you're going to be wrecked. Like, there's no other way of saying it. You're just going to be wrecked, because there's the cognitive overload of, like, all of the conversations, trying to keep tallies of all the relationships, after every single meeting, follow up. If you don't follow up, there is no point in meeting them at all. Making sure that they remember you. Like, there's so many different things that you're thinking about in order to make it the most effective relationship possible. So, yeah, it's tiring, bro. The other two things that I've kind of written down around this, and that's around running or company remotely, is that emotion gets lost. completely lost in any sort of digital communication. I understand what Slack is doing with emojis and WhatsApp is doing with emojis, where you're trying to lighten the mood or lighten the situation or to add some sort of emotion or context to a conversation, but realistically it gets lost. And I think that that's something that you need to be aware of. That 1 hour, I think, from now on will be a video call where people can look at your face and go, ah, he's smiling, he's wincing, he's whatever it might be. But don't spend too much time on worrying why people are upset. For instance, when Steve would send a Slack notification or send a Slack message, he's just logical. Like, he'll write it out in English. But in some circumstances, you might read that and go, is he pissed? Is he annoyed at me? Like, is there something going on there? But it's not. It's just Steve's way. And you kind of learn that after a while. But don't rely on, it's amazing for short communication, but don't rely on Slack, WhatsApp, emails, example, in order to really build relationships. Use them for task/transactional items to get done. And then the final point that I have on this is to trust your team. I'm bold when it comes to this as well. Well, not bold, but I find it difficult to let go. And that's, the team are far more capable than I am as one person. And they're clever and creative and have huge imaginations and can probably do tasks a lot better than I did. Like, the whole reason that we hired these people is because they're really good at what they do. So for me not to trust in that is not a good idea, and actually a kind of a really bad waste of capital in a certain respect. So I think giving good responsibility, setting good clear boundaries, giving good structure, and trusting in your team is a surefire way to take more off of my plate and also stop constraining the company's growth. And that's it. That is it for episode number 59. What is going on? That's insane. I hope you enjoyed it, as always. So I kind of alluded to this at the very beginning of the podcast. I am stupidly humbled by the amount of people who are listening to this at this stage. And I just want to say a big thank you. The best way that more people can listen to this or get even, you know, to discover this podcast is if you leave a review in whatever service that you listen to the podcast on. That might be iTunes, it might be Stitcher, it might be Spotify, whatever it might be. Leave a little 5-star and I will love you forever. Okay, thank you all very much. Peace.